she inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and thanks for joining us. A brief shout out to one of our sponsors, one that I love to do a shout out about, Habitat for Humanity. They are an organization that are dedicated to building homes, community, and hope. And I invite you to check out Habitat nearest you and maybe even consider volunteering for one of their home build days or their Brush with Kindness days. They do so many things for our communities. We thank them for their support and for all they do to make our community and our planet stronger and more sustainable. If you are in Tucson, check them out at HabitatTucson.org. So everybody, I hope you're ready to spend another fun, informative hour with me. The name of our show today is Plastic Whale. Plastic Whale is the first professional plastic fishing company in the world. And when I say, what do they fish for? That, I said it correctly. They fish for plastic. It's a social enterprise with a mission to make the world's waters plastic free and create value from the plastic waste. This all started about 5 years ago with a single challenge to build a boat made of plastic waste. Today, Plastic Whale has a fleet of 6 design boats, which our guests might say maybe there's more by now, but they're made from plastic in the Amsterdam Canal. Please join me in welcoming Captain Marius Smit, the owner of Plastic Whale, the founder. Welcome, Marius, and thank you so much for being here to share this exciting story. I wish I was there.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
How are things? Is it sunny Amsterdam today?
No, it's actually quite gray weather. Up to last week, it was really unusually warm, and now it's turned cold. Autumn is in Amsterdam at the moment.
Well, when we
but still always very beautiful.
Always very beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places I have ever visited, and I say that sincerely. So, but it's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's, the show is about you. So tell us a bit about your background, and you have to share with us the story of Man on the Moon. But tell us how this all got started in your journey to starting Plastic Whale.
Yeah, and I at the time I studied international management in Amsterdam, and to tell you the truth, I was more motivated by the international part than by the management part, because I wanted to travel and see the world and spend time with a lot of international people. So for my studies in international management, I did my internship in Washington D.C. So I spent some time in the States as well. And afterwards, I went traveling working in different countries. And in the end, I ended up in marketing functions. And I noticed that I didn't really enjoy it. I didn't really enjoy sitting in the office, but I wasn't really enjoying the things that I was marketing, the products. I had no intrinsic motivation to actually try to market them. So after a while, I quit my job, and I went traveling the world for a year together with my girlfriend, Karina, who's nowadays my wife and mother of 2 kids. So it was a nice trip, as you can imagine. And everywhere we went during those travels for a year, we encountered plastic waste. So we went to the most pristine, faraway places, and everywhere we went, even diving, we encountered plastic waste. And we weren't that surprised, because growing up nowadays, you grow up with plastic waste all around you. But one time we were staying on the north side of Borneo in this really beautiful romantic little beach, and we were staying in this romantic little beach hut. And one morning we woke up, and the weather was gray, you know, with a lot of wind, because hundreds of kilometers north of Borneo, there had been a typhoon.
Right.
And when we arrived at the little beach, it was engulfed with plastic waste. And that was actually the first time, it was about 13 years ago, that I saw something called plastic soup. I had never heard of the phenomenon, and that was the time that I was introduced to the phenomenon. So during those travels for a year, I decided that I wanted to change my life. I didn't want to be in the office anymore, and I thought, well, if I'm here anyways on this planet, let me add some contributes in a positive way.
Right.
So let me do something about this problem called plastic soup. But then I came back home and I didn't know how to start because I had never started something. You know, I had always given briefings to advertising agency, etc.
But this was yours.
So I didn't know how to start.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Go ahead. I said this was yours. It wasn't telling someone else what to do. This is something that you had to do.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I had never started anything myself, so I didn't know where to start. So after a year of traveling, we got wed, so we had officially no money anymore. So in the end, I had to make money, and I went into my old profession, which was marketing. And after some years, I became a freelancer. And at that specific time, something major happened, and it was about 6.5 years ago. And that major thing was social media. All of a sudden, because of social media, a loner like me could connect to people from all across the globe with the same kind of frustration or mission or challenge. And I started thinking, well, I need to create a movement to get it with me, but how do I create a movement? And then I was inspired by JFK's speech of 1961, during which he portrayed this man on the moon. And at the time, it was clearly impossible, but it was time-bound. But it was also relevant because of the race against the Russians. But it was mostly this clear vision of a man standing on the moon that excited people. And that created a lot of innovative spur and cohesion within the United States, as I understood. So I thought, nowadays with social media, you don't have to be called Kennedy anymore to create a movement, but you have to create your own man on the moon. So 5.5 years ago, I started with My Man on the Moon. I published it via social media, and that was all I had. And My Man on the Moon sounded like, I want to build a boat made of plastic waste, yet I've never driven a boat, let alone build one. So please help me. And that was the way I started 5.5 years ago, with nothing but that. I had no financial means, no specific network, no knowledge of boats or plastics, nothing. But I had a strategic thought. That was to create a network of people that wanted to work together towards a positive outcome. That was the way I started. So,
You had the dream, and that's, I mean, it's just like, I will tell you that in my 9 years of interviewing people, this is one of the most exciting and fun topics that I've covered, because you're an entrepreneur. You didn't know it at the time, but an entrepreneur and visionary, yeah. And now you're making it happen. So you put it out on social media. How did you start how did you start building a business model? Did it evolve? What happened? I know the end of that story, but I want you to tell us.
When I started, I had two kids. I was 38 years old. I had a mortgage here in Amsterdam and a wife who was asking me, well, great story, Marius, but how are you going to provide for your family? And I had a few convictions. One conviction was that there were millions of people that were fed up with just all the negative stories that you hear on the news, and that they wanted to do something positive. That was the one thing. The other conviction was that there are a lot of companies who feel the pressure to work more sustainably and to do good, but they don't know how to because it's not in their systems. But the pressure will continue to grow because the problems will continue to grow. they don't go away. And so people will ask more and more of companies to actually prove, and not just say, but actually prove that they are doing things in a sustainable way.
Right.
So I said to my wife, I'm not going to be the one who's going to preach, but I'm going to be the one who's actually going to take action, because people don't know how to take action anymore. I'm going to gain experience taking action, so I'm going to do this thing, and if it becomes some sort of a success, companies who want to take action as well, but they don't know how to, will approach me, and they will ask me, will you help us, and then I will write invoices. That was my business plan.
That's a good plan.
Something completely different happened. Actually.
Oh my gosh!
The basic thing is that that is what is actually happening at the moment, and that's an important truth to our business model. Is that a lot of people want to take action, they don't know how to, but we actually make things happen. And that attracts so many people, also businesses, but also governments. Yesterday I was talking to a government in the Netherlands that want to hire me as some sort of an ambassador to actually involve people, because we involve people and they don't know how to involve people effectively, and we do. So, you know, that's how things evolve. But to come back to how I started is that as soon as I published my Man on the Moon, so that I wanted to build a boat made of plastic waste, so please help me. As soon as I published it, my email and my telephone exploded. So many people that just wanted to help me. And I had a very limited network, but I had forgotten what kind of a network is behind your own network.
Right.
Because people, you know a lot of people, and they know a lot of people. And there were so many people that were attracted by the fact that a father of two quit everything that he did before and was just aiming to build a boat made of plastic waste. They saw it as an adventure, so they wanted to help me. So there were lawyers, there were PR companies, communication companies, designers, recycling companies, all sorts of different people that wanted to use their specific skills and knowledge that they had built up in a professional life for something for the better and for something fun. So some sort of an organization evolved, because some people were spending a lot of time with me, and we created the foundation. And after a while, I was talking to so many people that I told one of my new colleagues that, well, I started this because I wanted to do things, not just talk. And I said, well, we're from Amsterdam, we have the canals of Amsterdam. There are so many boats. We can arrange some boats. We can invite a lot of friends, arrange food and drinks and fishing nets, and we go plastic fishing on the canals of Amsterdam. And we call it old-fashioned. We call it old-fashioned Amsterdam canal plastic fishing, as if it's been a long-standing tradition, as if we've been doing this for many decades.
Right.
And people liked the idea, you know. It was some sort of it was a bit more than a joke, because we really wanted to do it. But we thought if 50 people turn up on 10 boats,
that's good.
You know, then you have a nice event. Yeah, exactly. But so many people liked it that for the first event, our public event, 450 people turned up on 30 boats.
And what did you
do? Next event,
what did you do? Like, what was going on in your head and your body when you had 450 people show up with 30 boats?
Yeah, I mean, that was because it was was about 6 months after I started. And obviously, the first discussions with my wife started as well, because I didn't make any money yet. And all of a sudden, and I was coming home every day with all these enthusiastic stories about people that were so thrilled by all the things I was doing. And she said, well, but are they going to sponsor? And I said, no, but they will evolve, you know. And I kept her waiting. for 2 years, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
But after 6 months, she was getting impatient. And then she saw all these people gathered together, and she saw the impact. And then she was convinced as well that, okay, what marriage is doing is actually making some kind of sense. She didn't know what kind of sense yet, but some kind of sense. And, you know, and for me it was also, you can talk in theory, but actually getting people to get involved, to leave their house on a Sunday afternoon to go plastic fishing on the canals of Amsterdam, that's really, really
There's
special.
There's got to be something so to the it, next yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it became this big thing, because the next event, there were 1,200 people on 72 boats. So a whole fleet of boats filled with people on a Sunday afternoon with fishing nets to go plastic fishing in Amsterdam. And so this whole plastic fishing became the big hit. It became more important than the boat itself, which was good, because the boat was not a goal by itself. It was more a means to create this network of civilians, companies, and government institutions that wanted to work together towards a positive and concrete outcome.
Right.
And after a while, Starbucks Coffee approached me. They have a large office here in the Netherlands. And they said, well, we really like the plastic fishing. Can we do that as well? And I didn't understand it. Because
Starbucks wants to go fishing
your company,
with me?
How do you mean plastic fishing with a company? And they said, well, we have company events. So why don't we go plastic fishing as an event? So I said, well, why don't you go plastic fishing? And it was actually the first invoice that I sent was producing an event for Starbucks Coffee going plastic fishing. Ever since, we counted it yesterday, 125 companies have gone plastic fishing with us.
You are kidding.
In just a few years. And it's growing day by day. And none of these we have approached. We have never done any sales or marketing. It's all mouth to mouth just people calling us that they want to be involved and they want to go plastic fishing.
And I'm
so
sure
it's become a business.
At this point, you have to say your wife is starting to be very happy because when you got the first invoice written, I'm sure it was like, the children are going to be able to eat. Thank goodness.
for half a month or something. And then, she wasn't convinced as yet, I must tell you. But it has taken a few years because everything evolved. You know, I've been doing this for 5.5 years, and since 2 years, we've actually worked it out professionally. So next to a foundation, we've got a company with shareholders. But in the meanwhile, I have been working at a large company for 1 year as well, just to pay the mortgage. So I put this on the side. I was working on Plastic Whale in the weekends and in the evenings. But during the day, I was working for the boss, for the man again, you know? So, yeah.
So that was a lot. And,
to continue the dream.
Yes, to keep the dream alive. And we have about a minute and a half to a break. And when we come back, some of the things I want to ask you, I mean, you are a wonderful storyteller as well. And I mean that. It's like, I don't want to say anything. I just want to hear what you're doing and how you started to make your dream come true. And it just blows me away that without any marketing dollars, with just literally a vision, no acquisitions, it's grown to this. It just takes one call from a company like Starbucks. So when we come back, I'd really like to talk to you about what did you do when you started amassing this vast amount of plastic, because all these boats had plastic, so we can cover that. And then a little bit more about, to me, your business, you create a business from attacking a problem. And I think that that's really critical that we talk about that. And you had some magical ingredients that has created incredible success. It's a great story, and there's more to be told when we get into now your bacon boards. And I'm like, I love this guy. We have to get this out to all the world to hear about. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the vision of, creating a business from attacking a problem, how you did that, and so much more, the magical moments. We'll be right back, everybody, raising awareness about plastic in the water, the plastic whale.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy, darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. The name of our show today is Plastic Whale. Plastic Whale is the first professional plastic fishing company in the world, and I smile every time I say that. I'm going to ask my brother if he's going to be going plastic fishing anytime soon because he's a big fisherman. Plastic Whale actually captures debris and plastic waste from Amsterdam's many canals. Thousands and thousands of discarded plastic bottles are repurposed into building materials for the company's boats, and even bottle caps are used to create a colorful mosaic for the boat's floor, which we're going to talk about that. The company then uses the boats to fish for more trash to make more boats. Joining me for this hour to share how all of this happened, how the magic begun to get woven, is Captain Marius Smit, the founder of Plastic Whale. And I just want to add a personal observation. A lot of times when I introduce guests, I do a very long intro about the person. And Marius, this is a high praise to you. On your website, it's all about the mission. It's all about what you're doing. There's not a lot of stuff in there about who the people are and what their backgrounds were and that they had a background in international marketing. And I just thought it was very interesting. I dug quite deeply, and then it hit me. You're all about the mission. You don't really care about the story. You're glad that you became to be the storyteller. So that's a compliment, and I really appreciate it. So
thank you.
We're talking about the story. I mean, no, it was like, wow, this guy is all about how do we get plastic out of the oceans before they're all dead or water.
Mm-hmm.
So attacking a problem. It's a very interesting way to create a business model. A lot of conviction. Do you want to add anything to that and how the world received that? Obviously, quite well.
I don't know for sure if I follow you quite well.
Well, you saw a problem in the ocean. In the canals, you saw plastic, and you said, how are we going to eliminate? And a lot of businesses are creating something new. They have a new gadget, or they're going to be a marketing, guru. But what you saw was a problem and how to solve it.
Yeah.
And built a business around it.
Yeah, many people call it the purpose economy. It's a new economy evolving around problems. It's about entrepreneurs who don't want to start with a business model for creating a new product and they want to market it, but they want to create a business model around solving a problem, because many people are involved in problems. They want them to be solved, and there's a lot of social value in solving those problems. And traditional companies have traditional structures and business models, and very often they say that they want to be sustainable, but those structures don't really give them a lot of way to become sustainable. But also, as we have mentioned as well, have noticed, is that especially marketeers, if you ask them if they do something about sustainability, they say, well, we use green energy, for instance. It's something that they must do, and they think it's a bit of a hassle. And it hasn't really got to do with their core business. But I believe that it should be part of your core business because it's something that you can create more business with. It can actually become a sustainable competitive advantage. That was one of my main convictions when I started Plastic Whale, is that companies are looking for sustainable advantages. But nowadays, everybody can say something. You know, you hire the best advertising company and you can say a lot of things and convince people. But in the end, your next competitor can hire a better advertising agency and tell it in a better way. So your competitive advantage is gone. But if you do actually do something different and prove it, you create value and you create a competitive, sustainable competitive advantage that isn't so easy to copy for your next competitor. So I really believe that the purpose economy will change the way a lot of businesses will do their business, but it will take a long time. But I'm one of those people, just one. I mean, there are many that have started with the problem and believe that if you attack it in the right way and involve as many people as possible, you will create value, and from that you will create a business model. So it's the other way around, thinking the other way around. And for a lot of people that is very difficult, because normally if you have to show your business model, you have to show that if you invest money now, you earn it back within a year or 2 years. Otherwise, it's not worth it, you know. But I'm looking at the long run, and I'm looking at creating real value. It's proven to be right, because people are paying for the services that we create. They are paying for what we actually do as a social enterprise. People value it, and that's why we have become a company. And that's also why I have never been attracted to applying for large subsidies, for instance, because I wanted to create value that is valued by the social community by paying as money for what we do.
I'm sitting here reflecting on, you know, 9 years ago, I went to Peru, to the rainforest, and I had a very successful job in corporate America. And things started to shift, and it became all about money and money and money. And I was very unhappy, didn't like what I was doing, you know, would sit out in the parking lot and not want to go into the building. And I started Mrs. Green's World, and it's the same thing. And I never heard the term purpose economy. I cannot believe that I haven't. And that is what, you know, how am I going to do this? What am I going to do? A radio show? Are you kidding me? You have no background in radio. And I just had this dream that if I could show up and share people's stories like yours, other people would want to listen. And we're still challenged with creating a viable, sustainable business model out of it. But 9 years later, you know, we're a strong but mighty team of seven people, and it's good. It's really good. So that's very inspiring to me. And I make a lot of jokes about Twitter and hashtags. I say things in hashtags, and at 66 years old, people think that's hysterical. But I think what I want to tell my team is that we should really start doing hashtag purpose economy and send that message out. Because which is a segue to the next part of it. When you are out doing what you do, and I know that you do paid presentations, you speak internationally, now the government wants you to be an ambassador. What do you want to how do you hope that you can impact people about our massive consumption of plastic? Is that something that you want to help demonstrate to people? It's not about picking it out of the canals, it's about not putting it there in the first place. So how much of that piece do you concern yourself with?
Very much so. I mean, it's at the core of what we do. We also say, I'm not starting propaganda against plastics, because in a way, plastics is a beautiful material. It creates a lot of possibilities, solves a lot of problems. But there's one negative side to it, that if you just discard it like it's valueless, then it creates a lot of problems. And it's so cheap that it's easy to make a lot of. And in the 1950s of the last the century, it was really introduced as a disposable. You know, you can you can just chuck it away.
Throw
you don't
garbage.
Have to clean any dishes anymore. You know, you throw it away. And that that has become a major problem, is that it's become a disposable. We think of such things too easy. So the thing that is at the core of what we do is that we want to change the perception of plastic being waste, disposable, into its valuable raw material with which you can create valuable things. We fish plastic out of the canals, and we recycle that plastic into beautiful design boats. I mean, not rafts made of glued together bottles, but really beautiful boats. And people are stunned that we can actually make that kind of boats out of plastic waste. But that's what we want to show. We want to show this valuable raw material. And then the whole chain, so not just the consumer or not the, just the producer, will change the perception, but the whole chain. Because if something has value, you will treat it differently. And that is, it's a long-term thing, but I think that is true for all sorts of raw materials. We need to look at things differently, use it differently, use it less, or recycle it better, you know. That's so it's very complex, but it starts with that perception of it not being waste. It's actually something that we need to use in the right way.
Yeah, it's being conscious about that.
Yeah.
And I have to ask you this. You told us a little bit about your background, and then you segue to these beautiful boats that are, they are, I've seen many pictures on them. They are beautiful boats. I'm assuming that you did not know how to build a really great plastic boat. Tell us about some of the process of the design and the manufacture of that, and what were some of the fun challenges, and who helped you? I mean, that's a big deal to make it a vessel that's seaworthy. It has to be safe. It has to be secure.
Yeah.
And it's made from plastic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that was actually a fun ride because, well, as I told, as soon as I started my Man on the Moon, as I published it, I was being approached by all sorts of people. And an organization was evolved, so I was working together with quite a few people that helped me on a regular basis. And at one point, I was saying to Rob, one of my new colleagues, so to speak, saying, we really need some boat designers now to help us think about the design of a boat. But we didn't know any designers. And in the next few days, we got 6 emails from different designers that they wanted to help us. And it's no lie, every single day something like that happens. Is that if we just say out loud that we need something, all of a sudden it turns up. And it's really funny, but I think it's got to do with if you just start creating, if you start doing, and if you tell people and are not afraid to ask for help, it will come. There's so many people who just like to help, but there's so few people who like to ask. And we just asked, and things evolved. So we also got to talk to a recycling company, and we visited the recycling company, and they helped us think about the different kinds of plastics that are available and the things you can do with it. And that was really interesting because they had a narrow perspective from their own recycling point of view. They were recycling and working with specific kinds of plastics that had limited use. So in the end, we came up with a design that was possible in their eyes, and it was some sort of a floating, what would it call, floating raft.
Right.
It didn't really look like a boat. But we thought that was the only thing that was possible. So that was the first thing we published, and not many people were really reacting enthusiastically. But then the Port of Amsterdam, who was immediately a supporter of our endeavor, told me that they knew a small boat builder in Amsterdam that was using some sort of PET foam, so from PET bottles.
Right.
PET bottles.
Okay.
They brought me, they gave me the contact, so I went there with my original raft idea, and they told me, well, that's not a boat, Marius, we're not going to build that for you, but I will show you something different. And they showed me a boat worth $250,000, a beautiful boat. And I was standing on it, and he was showing me what kind of material they used as the core, and it was PET foam.
You're kidding.
And PET is very well recyclable. Yeah, it's very often already used for wind turbines. And I thought, well, PET is very well recyclable. So I want a boat like this, as beautiful as this, but made from recycled PET. So I was naive, and I thought, well, I just arrange it, not knowing that there are just a few companies recycling PET, and there's even fewer companies making the PET foam. And they're working in large quantities.
Right.
And normally they don't help small fries like me. But I got into contact with, the entrepreneur himself, and he's, a rich, powerful person. He was sitting in front of me on the table, and he said, Marius, I normally don't do this, but I like the fact that you have the balls to actually do this, so I'm going to help you.
I love
and,
it.
And he helped me. Yeah. And the next person said the same thing. So all of a sudden, we had a stack of PET foam boards, and we could start building a boat. So the core of our boat is made from PET foam. After that, we use glass fiber and epoxy. So those are the more traditional materials.
Right.
To make the boat stiff and hard enough and so safe for travel on the water. But the core is made from recycled PET. And that's how we made our boats.
And how many boats do you have now?
I'm looking outside of the window now of my office, and there are 7 boats now.
You're just trying to make me sad that I'm not there. I told you, it's like, this is one interview we should have done on site. What is wrong with my show producer? Kelly's going to be hearing from me. And I told you my daughter was in Amsterdam, and it is truly one of the most beautiful places on earth. And so 7 boats. Okay, someday I'm putting it on my bucket list officially. And maybe some listener is out there and I just put it on my bucket list and I'm asking for it, and they'll want to take me with them to Amsterdam to film this for Mrs. Green's World.
Exactly.
So I'm putting it right out there. A lot of those things have happened for me.
That's right.
But you remind me of that it's sometimes when I am in the mire of the struggle and how do we increase our reach and our impact, you just keep showing up and putting it out there. So, which you did. It's mm-hmm. To me, one of the most amazing parts of this is not just what you're doing, but of how it came to be and the whole being of it and what's going mm-hmm. on. It just blows me away. And people just kept showing up. I mean, it's like, this is a really good story, and we need to hear more good stories these days, especially here in America. There's a lot of not so good news coming out. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah. We follow it.
Yeah, not a lot of. Yeah, it's more like a comedy
every
show.
Single day.
We're not on.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me that the whole climate change and the shape of our environment is not more front and center. We have about a minute to the next break, I think. But before we go to break, and maybe a little bit after we come back, it's such a short break. Why did you decide to focus on Amsterdam? You have been all over the world, and I know there's the obvious of that's where you live, but a lot of fishing boats can go to the ocean. There's a lot of plastic out there. I'd love to hear your philosophy, not challenging it, totally agree with it, I think, but why did you decide to work in the canals to clean them up first?
Mm-hmm. Do you want the answer now or after the break?
I think we should do after the break, because this is what I do. I ask these great questions, and then I hear the music starting, and it's like, okay, wait till the next break, because I think we have to do that, and then we have to talk about your social media, ways to get in touch with you, and of course we have to talk about waste boards and your next vision for what that's going to do to change the world. Everybody, please stay here with me. More about Plastic Whale from Marius Smith. You won't want to miss a second.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World. We are so excited to have with us for this hour Captain Marius Smith. He is the founder of Plastic Whale. He and his team, which is like, it's one of the most amazing stories I've heard since I started Mrs. Green's World 9 years ago, and I'm not kidding. He and his team have signed up for an ambitious task: rid the waterways of plastic and find ways to use it. It's such a full circle. Marius not only envisions a world of plastic-free waters, but also a world where people understand that everyday trash, such as plastic bags, can be transformed into a valuable raw material, because that is exactly what Plastic Whale is doing. They're building boats out of plastic. You can find out more about Plastic Whale, and I hope everybody's going to write this down, plasticwhale.com. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Plastic Whale. And I would also recommend that you follow Marius Smith, S-M-I-T, on Instagram. What did I see you on? Twitter. On Twitter. So that people can see what you are tweeting about. And again, Marius, thank you not only for taking an hour to be with us, but for what you're doing that helps all of us. You're raising the vibration of the planet and getting people to tune into the consciousness of getting engaged, being inspired, and acting on it and making a difference. I'm re-inspired, and I think I'm pretty up every day about making a difference, but this is like, keep putting it out there, Gina. What is it you're asking for? So, I don't even remember what my question was, and I admit it when that happens. What were we going to ask you? It's like, seriously, it's like, this guy is the cat's meow, and we were going to transition to waste boards? No. Yes?
That was the thing afterwards, right?
Yes.
You first wanted to talk to me about... I forgot myself. I got all entangled in many thoughts.
I did get carried away, but it's real. Oh, I know why you decided to do it in the canals and not in the ocean.
I saved myself. Yeah, true. Well, the first thing is very practical. I mean, I live in Amsterdam, and we've got these beautiful canals around here.
Yes.
And I thought, let's start in our own backyard, because 80% of what's out at sea, plastic waste, comes actually from the cities, from the villages. It's transported by ports and rivers, etc. So it starts right in your own backyard. But also, Plastic Whale is all about involvement. I started by myself, and I asked people to help me, and I want people to get involved. And if I would... create a vessel, for instance, to go into the sea. Well, first of all, the sea is so enormously big that it will take you a long time and a lot of energy, etc., to collect plastic waste.
Yes.
But also, you will be one of those crazy people on a vessel far out sea, and people will cheer you on, but they won't help you in that sense. And now it's that we go every single day, we go out onto the canals. with companies, with school kids, with the tourists to go plastic fishing, and we tell our story. And that's the way we involve people.
Right.
And other people see it, you know. They applaud us from the canals. People ask you what in God's name you are doing on a boat, on the canals with fishing nets.
Oh, I got one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Look, people, I caught a bottle.
People get excited.
Yes.
Yeah, people get excited. They make you turn around in your boat if they spot a bottle somewhere. So that's what. So a lot of people always tell me, well, you should go onto the great oceans, and I tell them, no. My approach is urban. I want to involve people in an urban way. Because that's where you create visibility, that's where the root of the problem is, and that's also where you can create a business model, because I always want to create a business model, because then it will be sustainable.
Right.
It's not sustainable if we are relying on subsidies and grants and things like that. It's only sustainable if you create your own business out of it. And that's also where the people are.
And you don't have to worry about running out, sadly. You probably don't have to be worried about, in your dreams, you'd run out of raw materials, but you don't really have to worry about that anytime soon, unfortunately. At least you're doing something.
It is in our mission statement that we want to make ourselves superfluous, and we really mean it, because I also think that you should create your business fluidly. You know, you don't have to stick to the thing that you're doing the whole time, forever. If you solve the problem here in Amsterdam, it's always been my conviction, if we are able to solve a problem in Amsterdam, we will never be out of work.
Right.
Because that will create new opportunities, maybe starting fishing in other parts of the world, maybe doing consultancy about the way you do this, you know. And I always believe if you dare to make yourself superfluous by solving a problem or by moving ahead, you will never be superfluous, because you will be in demand, because you are the front runner, right? And that's how I like to look at things.
And which is a perfect segue to the next thing in the fluidity of where we're going with Plastic Whale. We're going to wasteboards. Tell us about that. And they're beautiful. I mean, I ask everyone to go to wasteboards.com. These are not ugly.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. They're designer wasteboards. I just love it. So tell us about how that came about.
Well, one sunny afternoon, I was sitting somewhere drinking beer in Amsterdam, as we do in Amsterdam when the sun is out. And I was talking to one of my shareholders, Arnoud. And he used to be a skater when he was younger. And he asked me, Marius, can I try to make a skateboard out of the plastic waste? And I was skeptical, and I said, well, Arnoud, that's your project. Go ahead with it, but don't bother me with it. So he contacted
How many beers had you had at that point? And don't bother me with it. Yeah, you go do that.
That's the way we talk to each other here in the Netherlands. So he contacted a university, and together with some students, he created a prototype. And in the meanwhile, I had been talking to organizers of music festivals, because music festivals have a large issue with plastic waste on the grounds, and they wanted to involve the young visitors, but in a cool way, and they couldn't find the right way. So when I saw the prototype and the process of actually making this skateboard made of bottle caps, because we use bottle caps, I thought, well, that will be the cool thing to do with music festivals, is to bake skateboards from the bottle caps that we collect at music festivals. If you look at a waveboard, you can actually still see the bottle caps and still see the brands in it, so Coke, Pepsi, or Fanta. You see it all, so that's what people like. And every single board is unique, because So you can create all sorts of color schemes, you know. And so I approached my contacts in the music industry, and they immediately said, this is what we want. So, well, but in the meanwhile, we had to do a lot of development still, technical development. And last year, exactly 1 year ago, we introduced our concept, Waveboards, during the Amsterdam Dance Event. The Amsterdam Dance Event is the largest event in the whole dance industry in the world. I mean, all DJs, etc., come together in Amsterdam for a week, and it's a huge party. We introduced our concept, and together with that, our concept to have a mobile waveboard bakery. So to go from one
a waveboard bakery
to the next.
Oh my God! I just have to.
Well, yeah, exactly. With a waveboard bakery. And well, we've been baking waveboards this summer at large music events with our waveboard bakery. And the beauty of this concept is that it's so simple. You know, you have an oven, you have a mold, and you have bottle caps. You melt the bottle caps in the oven, put them in the mold, and after a while, you have a unique skateboard. But the beauty of the mobile board bakery is that you can close the board bakery, put it on a ship to anywhere in the world, and start baking skateboards from local
customers
with local people. And so create a local business model as well. So I was in Mumbai, India, for instance, a couple of months ago. And there you have a huge social economic problem, as you have in many, many, many places in the world, together with a huge plastic problem. And I thought, how cool would it be to start baking skateboards here together with locals? So offer them better working conditions, better pay, and also do something about their plastic problem. Because we use about 30 cents worth of plastic waste and about 35 euros. So that's about $40, I think.
Right.
Of traction wheels. And we sell those things for 180 euros. So about $200.
Wow.
And that's value creation right on the spot. So, and again, we just publish our thoughts, and now all sorts of things are happening. And we are being contacted from all over the globe, also for plastic whale, by the way, but also for wasteboards to start baking wasteboards. And we're actually talking to people now in the Caribbean, in Brazil, in India, in Indonesia, to start baking skateboards locally. So our next man on the moon, as we call it, would be to have 5 waveboard bakeries spread around the world in 2018. That's our next challenge.
You will so do it. Like, I am telling you, I just want to come on board, so to speak, as your full-time cheerleader, media rep, radio announcer, podcaster. It's like, I just want to get on the plane and come see this. And to me, there's a lot of discussion about green jobs and what does a green job mean and what is it? And I'm a big, you know, very much involved in the whole social justice part of climate change. And what you're basically saying, you take plastic waste, you work with local people, you create a local economic model. It's not like they have to go get $1 million to build a factory, to build the ovens, to bake the boards. You're offering better pay for the locals, better working conditions. And can we just throw in there the fun component? I mean, who would not want to be involved in something as exciting and fun as this? And is it correct, do no two skateboards look alike? Are they all different? And the website is wasteboards.com, and they're beautiful. They're just beautiful and fun and funky, and I'm sure.
Each board is unique.
Right.
Each board is handmade. It's completely unique. And we put them online. You can buy them online. And that's how we do it. So we just started. We've taken this under the radar so far because we wanted to improve our process and the quality of the boards. And on the 20th of October, we actually announced our next man on the moon to have 5 bakeries around the world in 2018. So we are now in the process of attracting funding to fund the next level, because, you know, it's we need to travel abroad. We need to set up bakeries locally, things like that, you know. That's what we're working on now. So these are quite exciting times.
There is no doubt in my mind, and I just have to check in with how's your wife feeling these days? I mean, you're still married, which is good. She stayed with you, which is good.
Still happily. Yeah.
And she's...
I managed that as well.
Yeah, she's seeing the dream. I mean, there is just such a beautiful story woven in this about believing in the power of your dreams. And it's scary, especially if you have 2 kids. What my analogy always is, I say I jump off the cliff and I know the parachute's going to open, even though I don't have one on at the moment, before I hit the ground, and it always does. It's a wonderful way to show up in the world. Not always, you know, there are some sleepless nights, let's admit that. There's sometimes, well, at least for me, there are some sleepless nights when I think, what are you doing? Where are you going next? And I'm going to be now coining the phrase, what is my next man on the moon? And I think we know it here at Mrs. Green's World. So we have another man on the moon.
Yeah.
And so that's your next man on the moon, is wasteboards. And I hope everybody got that. The whole circle of it, where you will go into communities that are very, have lots of poverty, extreme poverty, like Mumbai and places around South America. There's so many places there, and create, it's like a mobile economic model that people can adopt. It's very exciting to me. What would you say to someone that's listening that is really scared? You have, I mean, to me, this show has been about believe in the power of your dreams. That's the most important thing. It's how I show up in the world every day. And is there any, like, have you had some dark days? What would you say to someone when the clouds roll in and you think, what am I doing?
Yes, I spent most of my 30s whining to myself, you know, and about myself. To tell the truth, I didn't do the jobs that I wanted to, and I was just whining that I didn't know what kind of talents I had or what I should do. But I had all these ideas, but I never did anything with them, because I was just too scared of failure, too scared of a success maybe as well. You know, what if it really happens? Because, like you said, it's like jumping off a cliff. And most people just turn away from the cliff and walk back towards safety.
Yes.
Because, you know, and someday somebody told me and said, what's the worst that could happen, Marius? I mean, what's really the worst? Do you think that you'll starve because your friends or parents won't feed you anymore if you would go bankrupt, for instance? What is really the worst thing that could happen? And then I thought, the worst thing that could happen is actually continuing to live like this and denying the things that I really want to do and becoming more and more frustrated and unhappy and not knowing what to do with myself. So trust in the things that you really feel within, and also let go of only material things.
Right.
The only thing why you're scared is to lose material things, you have to live in a smaller house and maybe cannot afford a bigger house, or whilst all your friends are going 3 times on a holiday a year, you know, you can only maybe go once and that's so far away.
But then you can go plastic fishing. I have to end the show.
What
a great note, and I hope we stay connected. We have great shows coming up this week. Judy Simmons for our Tuesday show about a Green Your Halloween. And on the 15th, two other people changing the world, Grace and Corbett Lunsford, taking a tour with their tiny lab. Marius Smith, thanks for showing up in Mrs. Green's World.